League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Cutforth.
Hello.
And special guest, the fifth SciGuy, Noah Finn.
The third SciGuy.
This week, we're talking about postponing puberty and blocking blockers. But first, we've got to thank all of our patrons. Thank you, all of our patrons. Luke, why don't you thank our...
Thank you to all of our patrons. Yeah, appreciate it, as always.
And that's not all. Before we get into the episode proper, we obviously have to ask a question. And if you want to answer this question, head down to the comments if you're on YouTube, or the Spotify place if you're on Spotify. Anywhere else, Apple or all those other places, here is what you do. You go away for, like, I don't know, 4 years. You write a report as your answer. And what I want you to do is to speak to as many people as possible, specifically people that are maybe more negatively inclined towards your answer. And then, you know, hop in every now and then and give little bits of your answer, little pieces of your answer, and then come out with your answer, as I said, after 4 years. And I will probably see it. If you do like a big, long report with your name on it and AI-generated pictures of youths in there, That's how you answer the question. Are you trans?
Me, Luke Cutforth. I don't think so. What are we running with here?
Noah.
I don't think that's any of your business. I don't think that's got anything to do with you.
So personal.
Yeah.
Why are you asking?
So what are we talking about this week? We're talking about the cast report, aren't we?
Boo.
Yeah, we are.
Hiss, seethe. I this came out while we were in America, and I've been avoiding it the whole time. I saw it on my timeline. I was like, ooh, that's a later thought. And now I just have to sit and, you know.
Straight into the bookmarks.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
As soon as we landed, I was like, hey, Noah, do you want to come? Do you want to come do
it? Sorry, say that again.
Do you want to come do an episode of SciGuys on the cast report is what I said. That was the full sentence. But yeah, okay, so this episode, just to give you both, and I guess all of you as well, not recorded in a while, this is new to me, to give you both a sort of idea of what this episode is going to be, we're not covering the entirety of the cast report from start to finish because it's 388 pages, and realistically, you have to be gone in an hour or so,
yep.
Luke.
I've got to get back to my child, obviously. Yeah.
So, we're not covering the thing from start to finish. We might do that in a few months when I've had time to go through it and really pick it apart. But this is just kind of like an overview so you understand the basic gist of what it is, what it's saying, and what, I guess, other people are saying about it. Is that okay with the both of you?
No.
Also, no.
I guess.
What do we do now?
Thanks for watching and or listening. Goodbye. No. Okay, we're going to go through the episode anyway. So what is the cast report or the cast review? Can either of you answer this for me?
Yeah, so it's basically a report that came out. It's about...
Gay? It came out.
Congratulations.
Okay, congratulations to the cast report. It's a momentous time. But really, it's a report about pediatric care of trans patients. Or teenagers who are questioning their gender identity.
Yeah, I mean, broadly, yeah.
It's a big old load of rubbish.
Well, look, I can understand why you would say that, having not read it. not to have a go at you, I can understand why you'd say that, having not read it, because, I mean, having read through it, there is some stuff that's like common sense, yeah. Sure, obviously. And then a lot of other stuff that's like... Mm. And then some stuff that's kind of a mix of the two, where it's not exactly a dog whistle, but it feels like you're saying something kind of okay, but maybe if you scratch it the surface, it's not as okay as it might seem. But yeah, the review, as you said, Luke, it was basically looking at pediatric care of trans and gender nonconforming and gender variant, all of the gender words that you use for people that don't fit into the very simple man, woman, as you were at born.
Rihanna called them gender appropriation.
I think that is probably one of the most accurate
ones. That's what the A is for, right?
I mean, like, that's, I don't know.
Like me with my beard.
Me?
Corey.
Okay, no, so, right, we actually do need to talk about this. So, it was commissioned by NHS England, boo, England.
England.
Woo, NHS. So, basically, they wanted to improve their gender identity services, which, you know, makes sense. Noah, you've had service on your gender identity.
I've been serviced.
Yeah.
Like, in my gender identity,
the
yeah.
Full service. Why don't you pop open them buttons?
I initially tried... I'm just stripped the whole time. I initially tried going to the NHS route when I was a child, and it took too long for me to go through that, so I went private, but then now I'm on the care of the NHS.
And how is that for you?
It's not great. I mean, like, last time I had my appointment, it was just like a checkup. You have to have a checkup every year. And I could feel a big difference from the year before because there was a guy, like, monitoring the guy who usually asks me questions. And he was just like, just to let you know, testosterone can cause liver failure and you can die from that. And I was like, cool, I've been on this for 5 years now. good to know, something that I was told before I started. Yeah, it's a bit weird at the moment, and sorry, it's very underfunded.
There was somebody literally leering over.
It was on
the
Zoom.
Other guy. Oh, fine.
So,
I see.
But yes, it felt like he was leering. Fine, fine, he was like fine. Writing notes. I was like, I didn't say that you should do this, but
so the cast report is essentially looking at sort of the care of the NHS for trans people, more specifically trans youth. Young people, children, that whole group of folk from 0 to like 25-ish, right? And so commissioned by the NHS, essentially they're like, we're not doing a great job, true, let's do a better job. Didn't do a good job of doing a better job. So it kind of starts off by mentioning, you know, that there are a lot of AFAB people who are born and they say that's a girl, who... Mm-hmm. end up being like, I'm not a girl, actually, right? And you've probably heard about this, both of you, the whole idea that sort of the number of trans people has just exploded in the past couple decades. And more concerningly for TERFs and other, you know, concerned folk, the sort of makeup of that group has changed, not as in people have gotten better at doing makeup, but the breakdown.
They haven't.
Oh, God.
They haven't.
Why are you insulting trans people's makeup?
Because I can. Is that not my role?
Yeah, we brought you on here specifically to insult trans.
Well, if you did it, you'd get in trouble.
I just don't want to do it at all. Like, maybe we just don't insult trans people.
And can I say your eyeliner's looking especially horrific today, Noah?
So back to this. Basically, the number of AFAB people identifying as trans has exploded at a faster rate than the number of AMAB people identifying as trans. More trans guys than trans girls, broadly.
Well, it used to be the other way around, didn't it?
That's the point. Yeah. And that's okay. That's fine. That's what we expect, because we can write that off as just, you know, disgusting men who want to get off on being ladies.
Bloody predators.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and
I think it's just indicative of people like Jamie Dodger and Noah Fintz and Sam Collins being on YouTube. Anyway.
But no, yeah, so it mentions that it's been a shift from sort of trans women to more trans men. And then also that there are other issues that trans people have. You know, you can't just be trans nowadays. You've also got to be depressed or autistic or ADHD.
No, yeah! He didn't just like, he's like trans or autistic. He's like,
Who said that, Noah?
Luke.
You mean Luke?
Luke. Stop it, Luke. You silly old ginger. You stupid man.
Lighting. So it was a review, essentially, to look at the reasons for the sort of change in the number of trans people, the makeup of trans people, and also, again, the support that the NHS can give these groups. One of the major takeaways was the sort of lack of evidence around trans healthcare. That's what it talks about an awful lot. That's probably what you've seen being spoken about.
As in, they're saying there's a lack of evidence about trans healthcare.
Yeah.
That's not true.
Well, Noah, yes, it is. It is absolutely true if you discard almost every single study that's been done.
Oh, so that's the one thing I heard about the CAST report.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get into it in a sec. Yeah. So before we get into, you know, the findings of the CAST report, I just want to do a little baseline of information for you both. Do you know anything about puberty blockers, either of you?
Luke? Yes.
Not you. I know you do.
Luke? Yeah, so puberty blockers are prescribed to trans kids, and it delays the onset of puberty, so they don't go through irreversible changes to their body.
Yeah, the irreversible damage of puberty. That's
like
that's
when I grew boobies.
R.I.P.
Well, I have been on them. I went on them for like 6 months because they stopped periods. But they're also prescribed to like they're initially prescribed for like people with precocious puberty, right? Like children that start puberty
actually.
Too early.
No, so that's
was it for cancer?
So I can tell you.
Okay, I know all the bullet points.
Yeah, no. So puberty blockers, they were developed in the 80s. You're right, Luke. Yes, they do block puberty. That is their thing.
My reading comprehension is A star.
Very good. Very good.
Puberty blockers block puberty. What?
Who'd have thunk, honestly? So in 1985 was the first one that was approved by the FDA. That's the U.S. group of them that
decide. Food and Drug Administration?
Yeah, the Food and Drug Administration. They decide whether you can sell something to people as food
Or as drug.
It's
two categories of thing.
I mean, if it's not food, it's drug. Prove me wrong.
Fire.
That's drug.
Also food?
So, Lupron, or Lupron, I don't know how to pronounce anything. That was approved in 1985. That's Luprolide or Luprorelin. The pronunciation of this is not important, but that is probably the main one that you're going to be hearing about a lot of the time. Lupron, 1985. That's when that was approved. Then you had Zoladex in 1989, and then a few others in throughout the 90s and the 2000s. Zoladex.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Now, these are GnRH agonists. Do you know what GnRH might stand for?
G for gender?
Close. It's gonadotropin.
Re-inhibited. No. No. Just joshing with you. Just having a josh.
Gonadotropin hormone releasing hormone agonists is
that's way worse than what I said. I think I get that one.
Give us like another minute, we would have got
So, or gonadotropin hormone releasing hormone is GnRH, right?
Try saying that five times fast.
No, I don't even want to say it again. And then the A at the end is agonist. You don't need to know what any of this means.
You look like you're in real agonist trying to pronounce that word right now.
I did biotech. And here's the thing. People that do biotech, they don't talk, okay? So they don't have social skills.
Well, then shut up.
No. That's why I'm doing this. I'm the only one of us that has social skills, right? And because they don't talk, I never learned how to pronounce anything out loud because they didn't say the words out loud. They were too scared.
I was going to say, this one has social skills, but not when he's Luke.
No. I also did maths and physics, a secret side of Luke we've unlocked here.
Luke has never spoken, you, Luke, have never spoken about enjoying maths and physics. Sorry, carry on. Luke.
Never once, in fact. but we have a thing where they force everybody to do presentations because everybody's so terrible at just presenting what they know. Yeah. Nobody's good at conveying any information.
Yeah, that's why I have a job. That's why I got one, because they don't know how to talk to other people. And that's something I can do when it's behind the camera. Anyways, so there's a whole bunch of these puberty blockers, GnRH agonists, right? Now, they, as I said, from the 80s, you know, that's when they kind of were made. Now, 85 is when they were kind of approved by the FDA. They've been used off-label for precocious puberty since, what, anyone want to take a guess?
80s.
1981, yeah.
Certainly.
Now, precocious puberty is, you kind of went into it there, Luke. It's when, you know, a child who is before the age of puberty starts doing a puberty.
And you Noah went into that.
I think Noah did go into that.
Luke did not go. Right? Noah went into that. Yes.
Don't give Luke any credit.
Thank you.
You guys, honestly, you just keep on yapping, and it's in one ear, out the other, bouncing around. I don't know which one of you is which. Anyway,
well, there's nothing in the way between those two ears.
Ouch. Anyways, yeah, so precocious puberty. Basically, puberty will usually start between 8 and 13 in girls, 9 and 14 in boys. And when you've got precocious puberty, puberty happens earlier. It could also make you shorter because your growth plates will fuse early. You know all about that, don't you, little man?
Look, I grew a centimeter on testosterone. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't think you did.
I know I did. I literally got it measured before and after. They measure everything.
I think I grew at least a foot on testosterone personally.
Hey, now, but shut up.
But to be fair, mine kicked in a bit earlier.
So what are the status of your growth plates now?
Talk to my doctor. Talk to Luke's doctor.
I like that Luke talks about himself in the third person now.
How else is Luke supposed to talk about himself?
So, it was approved for the treatment of precocious puberty in 1993. So we're now in 2024 at time of recording. And that's a good 31 years.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Why is the 90s so long ago? That's not good. I was born then.
And it was so, so long ago.
You're older than me.
Yeah, I am older than you. Is Luke older than you?
Yes.
I am older than you.
Luke asks.
I don't think I'm trans, but my pronouns are Luke self.
So, approved for treatment of precocious puberty in 1993. Now, as you may have gathered, people who go through precocious puberty are children, like, entirely. So it was approved for use in children in 1993 for precocious puberty, and it's the standard treatment, right? So if the kid has got puberty too early, you give them puberty blockers. That's just like the standard treatment, right? And it's been used off-label for gender dysphoria since at least the late 90s. I couldn't find an exact date, but I think 97 is what comes up a lot. Basically, the reason I'm saying this is because you'll probably have heard or seen a bunch of headlines talking about how, you know, we've failed children, we've experimented on them, this and that. I think that can only come from someone who is either A, dishonest, or B, someone who has no idea what they're talking about because they've never looked into it beyond what TERFs say. And so they're just taking what they've heard. Because as soon as you look into it, you're like, oh, actually, no, we know that puberty blockers, we know what the effects of puberty blockers are on kids. Do we know what the effects are, you know, using them slightly later into your
puberty? We haven't had the time to see it, you know, for OAPs, but we've had 30, 40 years of being able to see what the effects are, right?
Yeah, exactly. And now, obviously, the use of puberty blockers in trans kids is slightly different than in, you know, kids with precocious puberty. It's a little bit later. But broadly, you know, kids are pretty resilient to this hormone blocker. And, you know, ultimately, there's not necessarily any reason to be terrified of their use. It would be kind of quite out of left field if there was suddenly some really major thing that we'd missed, you know, in kids with precocious puberty in the 30 years that kids have been, kids have been using puberty blockers for gender stuff. And also, you know, you mentioned this as well, Noah, prostate cancer, it's used to treat that, endometriosis, uterine fibroids.
Well.
Oh yeah, probably breast cancer. So the reason that it's used in prostate cancer is essentially to lower your testosterone, because testosterone aggravates prostate cancer, essentially. I don't need to worry about how. But
it's like a temporary thing as well.
Yeah,
it's not like you're on puberty blockers for years and years and years and years and years. You're just on it until you're old enough to start, like, other hormones.
Well, yeah, and then so you could also then be on puberty blockers cross-sex hormones as well. So, but then, again, you'd be doing that likely as an adult, and we already use these on adults. We know the effects of them on adults, and we know the effects of them to some degree in kids. Like, yes, we could know more, and we do need to do more research, but it's really not a position of this is some massive experiment that's been going on, because we've been using them off label for ages. So, now how does it work? Essentially, you put this in your body, it increases the level of hormones for a little bit, and then it decreases them. After that, you don't really need to know how. It's biochemistry stuff, all very weird. And
sorry, guys, but
look, here's the thing. I did biochemistry, and I know for a fact that if I start trying to explain biochemistry to people that don't have the base knowledge of...
That's all right. You keep your secrets. Look, that's fine. Just it's all you. It's all you.
I will punish you by reading out what it... okay.
No, thank you.
I've got time. I don't think these cameras do.
Luprolide acetate is a GnRH receptor agonist, also called a GnRH analog. Initially, The administration of leuprolide causes stimulation of pituitary gonadotropins, luteinizing hormone, LH, and follicle stimulating hormone, FSH. I'm not going through all of this. Basically, it stimulates stuff and then it like sort of stops the production of what they called of your sort of sex hormones, your testosterones, your estrogens, all of them.
Don't you have an episode on hormone blockers?
I searched it and it didn't come up. We've got an episode on something.
Huh. Okay.
I've been out of this for a while, man.
We've got
an
episode on everything.
Search. Yeah, there's probably an episode on it. Anyway, we did do this in an episode before. I think we discussed something about trans people at some point, and this came up, obviously. Now, what do you think the adverse effects of these puberty blockers are in children?
In children? Well, lower bone density. If you don't have a predominant hormone in your body, mm-hmm. then your body goes, oh, my bones are so dense. Well, no.
not dense enough?
He's definitely dense.
No, low bone density. He's
definitely denser.
You know what I mean.
Do you know what you mean?
No, I do. I said low bone density and then but no, that's usually fixed by just weight-bearing exercises.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, what you do for osteoporosis, right? So it's one of those things where it's something that we're aware of and it's something that you track when someone is on these drugs. So it's not like, oh, it gives you low bone density. You've got glass bones and paper skin for the rest of your life because we didn't bother to look. No, they check your bloods a lot.
Yeah.
That's when you're on any drug that we know what it does.
I've had a lot of blood taken out of me for all these hormones.
And he doesn't have much blood in him to begin with.
Yeah, so he's...
I can see the track marks from here, actually.
So, the adverse effects. Yeah, you're right. Lower bone density. But also... there's the major one. Now, this is the most common complaint. It occurs in 10% of cases. It's really bloody bad.
Is it hot flashes?
No, it's local pain at the injection site. It hurts when they...
Yeah.
When they poke you.
Dude, it does. No, I forgot. So I'm on...
Make that 11%?
I forgot about that. So I've been on every type of testosterone you can go on. I've been on two different types of shots. I've been on gel. The shots, the needles, they hurt, but I'm used to getting a shot every month, so it's fine, or every 3 weeks. The hormone blocker shot, for some reason, it's not intramuscular. It's it's put into your belly fat.
Mm.
But Google Zoladex needle, if anyone is listening to this, watching. If anyone is listening to or watching this podcast, it is the biggest needle I've ever been injected with. It's so thick.
How many inches?
I don't know how
centimeters. Do you know?
Like this? I
what is that?
That
like,
looks like 8
two,
inches to
three.
Me.
Is that
looks like a real big 8
is
inches?
Is that 2 inches?
I think
is that's 2-3 inches.
It's an implant, so it's not just a needle. It's a needle with the inside of it is so big, fat. Oh. So you get injected with a little rice-sized implant.
Jesus.
Mm. Yeah, it is the worst, but it only hurts while it's happening. I've never felt. upset about it afterwards.
Good to know. But yeah, no, that is the most common complaint. 10% of people, it hurt, goes ouchy when they stick a giant needle in you, which, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
The other common reactions, weight change, mood changes, skin... look, imagine what happens when you go through puberty or when you change your hormone balance at all.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things aren't possible.
So are you saying the crazy idea that maybe it's similar to the symptoms of going through puberty
or menopause or yeah, all of those things where your body's hormones change up. Weight change, mood changes, skin rash, acne, seborrhea, I think it's called, basically redness, flaky skin, vaginal discharge, vaginal hemorrhage, vaginitis, lots of
vaginal discharge. I feel like a thing with hormone blockers for a lot of people is that it causes dryness.
Mm.
So I did not know discharge was one.
I've got it right in front of me.
Wow.
Discharge.
Do you want a whole glob of it. Thank you. I'm good.
That makes sense, the dryness as well. Yeah.
Sorry,
I mean,
just while we're on vaginal discharge.
Yes.
I was reading about this the other day.
Why?
Vaginal discharge. Because essentially the lubricant, the fluids that come out of a vagina are basically just ultra-filtrated blood.
Mm.
That's what happens there. So if you're going down on somebody with a vagina, it's kind of vampiric.
You're almost consuming them.
You are.
All right, salt burn.
Yeah. We've all been there. It's
that's
yeah.
We've all sucked pussy blood. Obviously. Am I allowed to say that?
So those are the side effects or the adverse effects of puberty blockers in kids. Now, this is for the stat pearls. So if you go on to like PubMed, there are these things called stat pearls. Basically, it's just like a lowdown on different drugs or diseases or whatever, right? It's like kind of like a Wikipedia page, but for scientists. and better than Wikipedia. But yeah, basically, this is a direct quote. It says, typically, leuprolide is well tolerated in children. But trans ones, obviously, it makes them explode and turn into predators. Yeah, typically, leuprolide is well tolerated in children. It goes on to say a lot of other stuff, like all the adverse effects I mentioned, and the adverse reactions are different in kids versus adults, which, again, makes sense because kids are not adults. Mm-hmm. They've not gone through puberty.
I would say so.
Yeah.
Generally, children aren't adults.
I would say so.
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
I think it is, but it's rather quiet this time.
Well, Luke, we want to keep a big old secret about this Sci Guys merch.
Yes, please do not tell anybody and do not purchase any of it. Otherwise, people will find out.
They might see you wearing our merch or displaying our merch and think, oh, wow, what a cool person. And I'll tell you this, as a cool person myself, having people think you're a cool person can be very, very stressful.
Yeah, we can't have that. And we also can't have you supporting the show to exist that you're enjoying right now.
Yeah, so absolutely under no circumstances should you go to normalcitizen.store and pick up some Sci Guys merch. Some Sci Guys merch like beanies and posters and t-shirts and calendars and cool stuff like that. Definitely don't go to that store and buy that.
Goodness me, that's an awful lot of stuff that I'm not going to purchase.
Absolutely, Luke. Now let's get back to the show before anyone listens to us.
God, I really hope we got away with that one.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
So let's talk about the findings of the cast review and also the recommendations. Now, this is the overview from the website. As I said, I did read through the report, but I also did want to have the overview that it gives, because that's easier than doing an overview myself. They've done one. Okay, so if anyone's saying like, oh, you didn't read it, I did read it. Okay, I did. You got proof of that later on.
Work smarter, not harder.
Right? Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. So look, this overview, it kind of talks about a lot of the stuff we've already mentioned. I mean, the overarching kind of thing that I get from it is, you know, this kind of, I want to say almost like sort of both sides sort of stuff, but both sides from a sort of more anti-trans angle, right? So it's. Like, I would say that it comes off as being somewhat neutral, but there are just little bits in there, little dog whistles that feel like it's coming from a somewhat anti-trans place. And that could very well be a case of, you know, when you kind of look at these two sides as being equal, you end up having, like, you know, rabid bigots on one hand and a bunch of people who just want to be left alone to live their bloody lives on the other.
That's pretty equal to me. It's impartiality, right? That's how it goes.
Exactly.
If you've got a trans person on screen, you need to have somebody who hates their existence on there as well.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And which is why I'm on the podcast. Well, actually, Noah's doing double duty there. Trans, hates trans people. Whole package.
Keeps hates himself.
Exciting, yeah.
I don't want to, you know, sort of speak to where this is coming from.
The Tory government.
Well, no, I just mean as in, like, you know, the sort of writer of this, Cass. I cannot remember her first name for the life of me.
Let's Hillary?
Say, Hillary Cass. I don't want to say where she's coming from on this, because she does seem to have compassion for trans people, but J.K. Rowling seemed to have compassion for trans people when she released her essay saying, you know, men were mean to me, and trans women remind me of that, so leave me alone. Also, I'll fight for you. I'll march with you whenever if anyone goes against your rights. Except, of course, if I go against your rights. I can't march with you if I'm marching against you. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But no, so it does come off as that sort of dog whistly turf. But it's really hard to tell whether that's coming from a place of someone who is genuinely trying to be neutral, but is caught between extremists and just normal people.
I guess that's the difficult thing is when you're trying to in a sense appease both sides, you end up not doing justice to either.
Exactly,
it's kind of, you know, the argument against a centrist often
is that
you're getting neither instead of both, and
you're doing absolutely nothing. You're doing something, but no, you're not.
But centrists often tend to lean towards the right, I feel. You know, I feel like I notice people that say, I'm a centrist, they tend to lean a little bit more
It's like
rightward.
Considering any form of bigotry as any kind of valid is always going to...
It's going to pull you along a little bit. Yeah.
Push you a lot to the
and
right.
It kind of talks about the lack of research available, which is true. There is not enough research on trans people, trans healthcare. It talks about, you know, how they're... There's just not good enough healthcare for trans people in the UK, which is, again,
no
very
way.
True.
So let's take it away. Well, they've already decided after this CAS report that they're not going to prescribe puberty blockers to people in Scotland, under 18s in Scotland anymore.
So the way that this works as well is really messed up in that there are a lot of sort of satellite clinics that do gender stuff, and then there's private places, but the NHS hasn't really got a handle on, you know, providing gender-based care just broadly. So if one place shuts down, that's it wrecked for a whole bunch of people, right? Do you know what I mean? It's not like my GP is closed, I'll just find another one. It's the gender clinic is shut, I might now need to travel hours or pay like hundreds to get some kind
of
care.
That's what they did with the Tavistock
exactly
in the UK. They were like, this was like a year ago or something. They were like, oh, so trans kids are not being looked after well enough. We're going to close the gender clinic, but don't worry, we'll open up new ones. We'll open up new ones.
The plan was to open up four, I think.
And we'll open them up.
They've opened up two, maybe, I think, mentioned in this report. Again, this report, like, it does talk about how there were difficulties with that because of the sort of environment around these sort of issues, right? Like, sort of trans rights, the trans rights debate, as people are calling it, which I don't think there should be a debate on.
No.
On trans rights, but... There we go.
Can I also just say that, like,
Yeah, there should be no trans debate. That means no debate coming from you at any given time.
Oh, no, dude. I got referred to the child gender clinic when I was a kid, the NHS one. But then by the time I managed to get there, because the waitlist was so long, I was an adult. But the one appointment that I did have where they were just like, unfortunately, we can't fast track you to the adult one. And I know you said to just, like, refer you to that one when you're a kid anyway. My mum told me, like, last year, that while I was in the room, she was like looking really worried in the waiting room, and somebody that worked there was just like, oh, don't worry, it's probably just a phase. So like the people that work at those clinics will be saying that. Like, my mum told me that last year because she thought it would upset me too much during the time.
Again, I'm glad you're here, because a lot of the things you're saying come up in the report, but from, again, a kind of weird angle, right? That is mentioned that some people feel a struggle to provide healthcare for trans kids because they don't feel comfortable doing sort of what they think they should do, right? And that could go either way, right? You could read that in terms of, like, you know, there isn't enough funding, there's not enough support for trans people, and so you can't provide adequate care for trans kids because of sort of waiting lists, red tape, transphobia from parents or other people, you know, around there. But you could also read it from the angle of there are some people who just want to basically give trans kids conversion therapy, and they're worried about the sort of pushback or backlash they'll get from that, which, if you want to give people conversion therapy, we did an episode on conversion therapy. It's torture. You deserve backlash. I don't care.
I think there's some merit in professionals who, for which the guidance and the treatment has changed so much during the course of their profession.
Oh, yeah.
To be
100%.
Able to say, I don't feel like I'm adequately able to...
Yeah.
Provide treatment to this
Definitely.
Person.
If you can't confidently do that.
Yeah.
From a lot of people that I know, a lot of trans people, I find that there's kind of a running theme of, like, GPs who are supposed to enter into shared care having no idea what they're supposed to do, and that then impacting the care of sort of trans patients. And
that happened.
I know you and like
they my GP refused to prescribe me testosterone that I had got prescribed from a professional. They were like, we just don't know that enough, much about it. And I'm like, that you're a general practitioner.
Yeah, but
the professionals told you what to do.
The thing is that sometimes people will go in having private prescriptions that haven't strictly followed the guidelines, right? And you know, we can sit here and be like, well, yeah, for many of those people that was the right thing. These guidelines and well, less of the guidelines, but more the sort of the waiting lists and just the lack of infrastructure and lack of real care to get this done, you know, can result in people who really need that care not getting it. And so going private can be their route to getting that. And while they might not follow the guidelines, for plenty of people who are being forced to take that route, it is what is best for them anyway, right? So
my place definitely did follow the guidelines.
I'm not saying that's the case for you. What I'm saying is that That is the response from some people. And that's, you can understand that angle, right? You can understand a GP being like, well, look, this didn't follow the guidelines. I don't actually know enough about this, so I don't feel comfortable. Like, I mean, like, this is my responsibility. I don't want to have this be a case of malpractice. But then on the other hand, like, this comes down to training, knowledge, like, people, like, The fact that this is something that can be happening right now, it means that the NHS, the government, has just failed trans people insanely, right? You should not be getting a shared care agreement, going to your GP and your GP being like, I can't actually help you here. I don't know what to do.
Not even from like a trans perspective, though. If you have any other primary caregiver, if you go to your GP and you feel like you know what's best for your health most of the time, and you go along and you know that there's something that needs to be done, but they're just not active enough. If one person is basically your gateway to help and that person isn't able to fully help you.
Yeah. Or they just refuse.
Or refuse to.
Yeah.
It's just that in the case of trans people, that's going to happen far more frequently, isn't it? Because there's going to be even more barriers and fewer GPs that are able to confidently provide that help to their patients as they should.
And ultimately it's a failure on multiple fronts, right? Like that's the main thing here. And this report, it does highlight some actual problems, right? It's not, I wouldn't say it's all bad. There's a lot of common sense stuff in there. There's a lot of like, well, yeah. And there's a lot of, you know, little bits where I'm like, you know what? Like, this is entirely fine. Like, this is not sort of a diatribe from some crazed sort of bigot, right? This is some even-handed stuff and then a lot of just really, really harmful stuff in there as well, right? Like, and again, this is not me trying to defend Hillary Cass in any way, shape, or form. I'm just saying that, you know, there are things in the Cass report that are positive, right? Like, there's some things that I read through it and I'm like, yep, I'm actually fine with that. Whereas when I read a paper from, say, Lisa Littman, which I've done far too many times. If you don't know who Lisa Littman is, she's the genius behind rapid onset gender dysphoria. You know that thing where kids just suddenly have gender dysphoria because all their friends do? And where did it come from? Yeah.
Contagious.
That's it. She came up with that.
Bloody rogs.
But it was debunked by the medical community, by the way.
Oh, yeah. It's debunked. It's not true. It's nonsense. Like, it's rubbish. She has... Oh, my God. Her papers are... They're fun to read, but they're a pain.
For some of the studies, she took answers from not trans people, but parents of trans kids that they found from websites made for parents of trans kids that don't want their kids to be trans.
She's so well known for being terrible at this that she tried to do a study on detransition, and so few people... She actually made the effort to not just go to anti-trans spaces, but so few people that, you know, are pro... sort of trans just knew who she was and did not want to be involved with her at all, that she basically still her entire cohort came from all of these like sort of maybe anti-trans or like
was this a year
spaces.
Or two ago,
a couple years ago.
I think I remember.
Yeah, she sucks.
It's just so skewed.
It's really, yeah, it's bad. In this case, again, like, you know, we're not covering the entire thing. We might do it during our Pride Month, like a full sort of deep dive into it, but that will take like a long, long time. So again, this is an overview and just a kind of look into, you know, the first couple sections of it, where it kind of gives recommendations and, you know, a few little sort of conclusions and a less of a conclusion, but more sort of overview on what the kind of scope of sort of problem here is. The problem being, you know, a lack of sort of adequate trans healthcare. And essentially, some of the recommendations that have come out of this are not providing hormones, providing hormones for those 16 and up, but from the ages of 16 to sort of 18, being really, really cautious with giving out masculinizing or feminizing hormones.
That's already something that they do. You used to be prescribed hormone blockers, like, as a kid, and it was only in special circumstances where they'd give, like, cross-sex hormones to people that were, like, 16. It was usually, like, in the UK, at least, it's, like, 18, you're fine, you're an adult, but 16 to 18, like... And also, like, those appointments, it's not just, like, one and done. You have to, like, I have a friend that was in the Tavistock Kids Clinic for, like, 3 years and never even had a conversation about starting hormones. It was just therapy.
I think this is what confuses me, is that there's this idea that things are being prescribed kind of willy-nilly without any kind of real process.
Yeah.
And that really just doesn't seem to be the case.
No,
it's not. Any trans person.
4 years of appointments. That's so much time to be spending. If you think about, like, going to your doctor, you can get prescribed a lot by your GP.
Antidepressants, like, immediately.
Yeah, dude, exactly.
You can walk into a GP, say, I'm depressed, and they're like, take them!
Pills.
Yo, take these antidepressants.
All over me. Yeah.
But no, I mean, you're right, and that's one of the things that comes up in this report. The transition, from a child to adult, right? And how a lot of people get, like, sort of fall through the cracks because there's such a long waiting list, right? If you refer someone when they're even, you know, 13, 14, right? 4 years later, right? They've only had a couple appointments. There's, like, the waiting list has ballooned, by the way, from when this report was started in 2020, 2 years up to, I think, now 4 or 5 years. I mean, do you know anything more about that, the waiting lists right now?
I mean, it depends on the clinic, but just for reference, like, I got referred to the kids clinic that's now been closed when I was 15. I didn't get seen for the first time until a week before my 18th birthday, and that was in 2018.
Mm.
And now it's 2024.
Yeah.
But yeah, the wait list, like you're not going to be seen. Time from, like, referral to, like, your first appointment has gone from, like, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4. So in some places, it's like 5 years before you actually get seen.
I think it went from 2 years up to 5 years in the past.
Depends on the clinic. But, obviously, like, broadly, people will be going across the country to be going to clinics that have shorter wait times, which then means you check the wait times on the website. It's way longer. And also, like, a lot of the websites, they'll have these questionnaires. And people will be getting emails. And I'm in, like, trans support groups. And people will be like, so I just got emailed saying they're now seeing people referred in January 2019.
Yeah.
5 years ago.
It's ridiculous. And so that kind of wait, right, you obviously would then have to transition from the child care to the adult care. And that transition itself can be a mess. Bear in mind, by the way, that I think if you get your gender marker changed, you also have to get a new NHS number.
There's things that are supposed to happen that don't. I have the same NHS number.
Right.
You're supposed to get a new one, and some people say you aren't. They don't.
Imagine getting a new one, right?
Sure.
And the issues that's going to cause.
Yes, you don't get called up for a smear.
The NHS is not running on modern enough sort of technology on the back end. No company is. I worked in outdoor advertising, right? Other than Excel, everything ran through this one program that we barely used to its full capacity. It barely worked. We were like, look, we can get a programmer in to make custom software that would make all of our jobs 100% easier. And they were like, nah, we'll stick to using Excel and this other program, but also we'll manually add everything into Excel. Like, that was part of my job at one point. And then I was like, I'm not doing this. And I automated all of it because, of course, I did. So many institutions that you think should be, like, up to date, they are running on old technology. And so someone switching their NHS number is probably, like, you know, there are going to be admin errors arising.
Well, you don't get emails about getting a smear test.
Yeah,
you need to get
boring
if you're on testosterone. Like that. And they didn't change my NHS number, but I'm, like, in my old GP, at least, like, when you log in, you're like, I'm here. It used to be like Mix Noah Adams. Like, instead of them being like, in the notes, transgender, these are things that he needs to be contacted for, they were just like, just change the title, I guess.
It just seems like that on its own is such a bad idea because, you know, there are intersex people, there are trans people. Now, you could say, oh, well, is there such a 1% of blah, blah, blah. Shut up, man, shut up. It doesn't matter if it's 1% of people or, you know, 50. if 1% of your population need this as part of their care, you should account for that 1%. Like, you know, how much of the population is East Asian or whatever, yeah, right? And there's, that's still an option on all of the bloody, you know, sheets when you've got to put down your ethnicity and race and everything, right? Yeah. Like, it still shouldn't matter that it's a small percentage. It's still a massive number of people.
700,000 people in the UK is 1%.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Yeah, it's...
Imagine what... that's the population of, like, some cities.
Yeah.
Or, like, bigger than most cities.
Me and all my transgender friends. 700,000 of us.
You and your little cult.
Welcome
yeah.
to Trans City.
But, yeah, no, so... The report does touch on a lot of this stuff. And let's just go through the first sort of section or so. There are some, like, little excerpts that I want to take out that I thought were sort of somewhat interesting. The first thing that I found, you know, that kind of stuck out to me was... I've faced criticism for engaging with groups and individuals who take a social justice approach and advocate for gender affirmation, and have equally been criticized for involving groups and individuals who urge more caution, right? Now, that was before the report. Hilary Cass just sort of has a sort of explanation from herself, a little sort of personal bit, just, you know, kind of like a bit of a foreword, right? Mm-hmm. And that was a quote from her. She said she was criticized for engaging with a sort of social justice sort of pro-social justice people, and others who are more cautious. Now, yes, sure, there are probably people out there who urge caution that aren't sort of just transphobic outright, right? Mm-hmm. But realistically, though, right? Like, I mean, a lot of the places that are posting about this are, you know, all of your sort of transgender trends, your SEGMs, all of these sort of really anti-trans groups are seeing this as a massive boon. And she did speak to, you know, sort of some not very trans supportive people, right? Mm. And I think it's interesting, this both sides thing that this report kind of starts with, of like, I was criticized for engaging with civil rights people and also racists.
Imagine if this was both anything sides. Else, like any other type of yeah. healthcare.
Well, yeah.
It's like, yes, I was criticized for speaking to people that thought heart disease, bad, we should get rid of it. But I also spoke to people that think everyone with heart disease should die.
Yeah.
So I'm covering both bases.
I spoke to both cancer patients and people who like to kick cancer patients in the face. And I was criticized for both.
I interviewed at least 17 pro-tumor groups.
They face a lot of criticism, but so... No, look, honestly, all right. Another interesting quote. On a personal note, I'd like to talk through this foreword to the children and young people in the heart of this review. Basically, I won't read the whole quote there, but what it's saying is essentially, you know, she spoke to some people that wanted more sort of options and more information on the risks and benefits of these sort of pathways, right? You know, of hormone blockers to, you know, cross-sex hormones. They want more information on that, the pros and cons, and also just more options, right? She said she spoke to people who wanted that, and you know, for you, this report might be a really good thing. And I spoke to a lot of other people who just want to get on the hormone blockers and the hormones now, who don't want to be restricted. You know, others of you have said you just want access to puberty blockers and hormones as quickly as possible, and may be upset that I'm not recommending this. And it's so weird to read this, just knowing
but
a lot of trans
not...
people, knowing that broadly, right? Like,
that's not how
it works. The way that this report discusses things is that, like, it doesn't use specific numbers in a lot of the sort of first bulk of it speaks more broadly, right? Especially in parts like this. Some of you have been really clear that you want much better advice on the options available to you and the risks and benefits of different courses of action, and will be pleased by what you will read in this report. Others of you said you just want access to puberty blockers as quickly as possible, right? That's a thing where, one, those two groups are not necessarily mutually exclusive, right? Like, you can want more information on, like, the risks and benefits, and also still want to get on them as quickly as possible. Like, but first off, the risks and benefits, if those aren't being sort of communicated to you, that's a failure of sort of, I guess, the professionals there, because the information is out there. It's like very readily available. I've looked on the Planned Parenthood stuff. I mean, I've looked at your things. I've just looked generally at the guidelines for the UK. Like, all of this information is readily available.
It's not even that it's out there. It's that it's a legal requirement for those things to be read to you. This is why I get annoyed about, like, this whole, like, thing where, like, there's this, like, famous detransitioner in the UK that tried to sue the NHS.
You can say Keira Bell.
Yeah, Keira Bell tried to sue the NHS because she was like, well, I didn't have enough. They didn't tell me what was going to happen, and I couldn't consent when I did it. When you go through a gender clinic, it's a legal requirement for the side effects to be read to you, for every single effect. So much so that, like, when I went to my clinic, the person that was prescribing these things had to go through the list with me. She was like, I know you already know. I know you've been Googling this for like years at a time because I know that's how long it takes for people to actually get within the system. But she had to look and read out every single side effect or change for testosterone, and I had to tick it. Every single one. But like, that's the kind of thing where it's like, it's not just like that it's readily available like out there in the world. It's like part of the system, part of the pathways. Like you can't pass this thing until you've been told this.
And that's what I mean when I say it's a failure of the professional looking after your care.
It's whichever person is doing this.
If that is not adequately conveyed to you, then that's a failure of the professional in that role.
Not because, the system.
Because they've not done the thing that they're supposed to do. Absolutely. Mm. Right. And yeah, I mean, just to speed through a lot of the rest of this, because I've got so many notes on so many different quotes, right? I mean, she says, secondly, medication is binary, but the fastest growing group identifying under the trans umbrella is non-binary. And we know even less about the outcomes for this group. Medication isn't binary. I mean, yes, you can either take it or you can't, but it's not like the outcomes of cross-sex hormones are binary. I know maybe like a handful of folk who are non-binary who have, gone on HRT temporarily or permanently, and they're happy with the changes that they've had, right? Like, I actually know someone who went on it temporarily to get some changes, were happy with those changes, and then they stopped it, and they're having a grand old time, right?
It's also like, this is all down to individual identity. You're never going to come out with a study that, like, encapsulates every single person's, like, individual feelings towards their gender. And also, like being non-binary is like such a spectrum. Like, there are some non-binary people that have gone further in transition that I have. Like, I haven't had bottom surgery, but there are non-binary people that have had bottom surgery. They've been on testosterone. They've had all this, like, and that's that. Them being non-binary, that's literally just a word. It's an identity. It doesn't account for like this kind of thing.
That's the interesting part about this report, because again, if I'm going to give it some kind of praise, it does talk about the individual nature of this, right? And it talks about how people are individuals. You can't sort of tar everyone with the same brush. And that's why it's really weird to me reading this, because from the way that people are speaking about it, you'd expect going into it for it to be this sort of super anti-trans thing. But it's so much of it is bubbling under the surface. And I think that's what's a little bit worrying to me, insofar as like, there's a lot of common sense stuff there. But there are also just a few bits where I'm like, this is not okay. The stuff that this is implying, it's the same as this dog whistling stuff that happened with J.K. Rowling, you know, like, what is it, maybe 5 years or so ago now, where, you know, we were at that point where people were like, oh, you're crazy. But no, like, we can see where she is now, full-on, rabid, raving transphobe. Like, this feels like, you know, the kind of beginnings of that.
I also feel like, even judging from, like, the first sentence or the quote you said, where, like, she spoke to these kind of peoples that were trans-affirming and these people that weren't.
Yeah.
I feel like that, like, my impression of it is just that, like, that's not really... Yeah. It's not really how healthcare works, is it?
That's what's surprising to me. I'm not quite sure. Is it supposed to be kind of a medical evidence-based approach, or is it supposed to be a sociological kind of like roundup of everyone's opinions and like we're forming judgments?
It feels judging from the reactions of people, like as a trans person, it feels like it's been made as ambiguous as possible. It's been made as neutral as possible, so that it will try and like appease everybody. That's obviously not going to work, but it also means that like, the fact that people can use this report and like the amount of like trans charities that I've seen that have like posted so many threads about it being like, we're really concerned about this report because people can very easily misinterpret the way that things are said and run with it, which is why that's what's happened with Scotland.
I think it's as well, it's created an air of really bad PR around this. And if I could run through, I've got a few things, you know, we're running out of time, and I've got a few things that I really, really want to debunk from this, so if I can just speed through those.
Speed round.
Right, so she talks about the sort of Dutch protocol, which was the whole sort of thing where people started using puberty blockers because of this one study. Mm. Now, this really bothers me, right? She says, preliminary results from the early intervention study in 2015 to 2016 did not demonstrate benefit. Now, this is talking about the study run on kids being given puberty blockers at Tavistock. So in the UK, it started, I think, around about 2011. It was published in 2020, right? Now, you've probably heard about the results of this. This was the one where people kind of took it and they said, oh, 98% of people that went on hormone blockers ended up, you know, having cross-sex hormones. That means that hormone blockers make you, it's cause and effect. Hormone blockers make you trans. We shouldn't be giving them to kids. No, they just choose the right kids for that. But what bugs me about this is she says, at which time it showed there was a lack of any positive measurable outcomes. Despite this, from 2014, puberty blockers moved from a research-only protocol to being available in routine clinical practice and were given to a broader group of patients who would not have met the inclusion criteria of the original protocol. Basically, what she's saying here is that this paper just, you know, didn't have sort of positive outcomes, like as in the use of sort of hormone blockers didn't have positive outcomes. Like it quite explicitly says that in the CAST report. Yet if you read the paper, I believe it's short-term outcomes of pubertal suppression in a selected cohort of 12 to 15-year-old young people with persistent gender dysphoria in the UK. Yeah, no, they say the exact opposite. Conclusions. Overall patient experience of changes on GnRHA treatment was positive. We identified no changes in psychological function, blah, blah, blah. Basically, she says there were no positive effects. And in the paper itself and in the discussion that Tavistock have of the paper, they say the exact opposite.
And I was going to say, what about all the other studies that suggest that it has positive outcomes?
We'll get there, right?
Just to be clear, that's a paper that's referenced inside the report.
The very first paper that's referenced in the report is this Tavistock study that was released in 2020, right? And she misrepresents the conclusions drawn. Like, just right off the bat, misrepresents the conclusions drawn. Literally, she says something that is almost the exact same sentence that is in the paper, but it means the exact opposite thing, right? She says there aren't any obvious benefits, and paper says there are obvious benefits, right? So she kind of goes on to talk. Yeah,
she's got
to
level the playing field, though.
Well, she goes on to talk about how there's sort of greater acceptance potentially, right? So she says there's the common explanation for this increase in trans people. I think it's sort of doubled in the past 5 years, or in the US, there was this idea that it doubled the past 5 years. It wasn't that, there was just a change in methodology. So they had a better estimate for the number of trans kids in the US over the course of 5 years, right? But regardless, you know, the number of kids being referred to Tavistock before they shut it down ballooned from, like, you know, under 50 a year to over 1,000, right? Mm. And that's really concerning, but also it isn't. Those are just referrals. That makes sense that, you know, if you know more about trans stuff, more people are going to be referred, because otherwise they'd just be sort of going silent, right? Yeah. Like, more kids being referred doesn't mean that there are more trans people. It just could potentially mean there's more awareness, which makes sense. But she kind of talks about how it's unprecedented. Greater acceptance doesn't result in such an explosion of the trans population. But I mean, if you look at the 5 year period from, I think, 2015 to 2020, 2015 to 29, sorry, the percentage of people over 16 in the UK who identified as lesbian, gay, or bisexual increased from 1.7 to 2.7%. And 2020, it was 3.1%. So 1.7 to 3.1% over the course of 5 years. It's almost a doubling.
Yeah.
That's LGB people, lesbian, gay, and bisexual. That was in the UK not even 5 years ago, right? So a rapid increase in this population isn't that concerning, really, necessarily, especially given greater acceptance and understanding. Then goes on to talk
about... In this room, it's tripled alone.
Whoa!
I wasn't gay or trans before 2015.
She goes on to talk about social transition, and that's a really worrying thing for me, that she talks about social transition as though it's an arm of sort of treatment. It's an arm of care through the NHS, which, yes, that's something that should be suggested on the NHS, but she talks about, like, potential sort of problems with social transition, and it's really, really worrying that we're setting this up to the point where haircuts, names, pronouns, clothing are all something that could be limited.
Medicalized
and then limited on that front. Like, I can see this, and, you know, people might be saying, you know, Corey, you're being sort of crazy about this. It's stop sort of catastrophizing. But I mean, it feels as though this is a setup, a sort of precursor to stopping trans people from being able to even sort of socially transition, which has thus far been something that any trans person can do, provided they're in a safe enough environment to do so, right? Like, you don't need anyone's permission unless you're, like, you know, a child, but as an adult, you don't need anyone's permission.
An inherent, like, freedom of expression, sure.
Yeah. And this could limit children's ability to do that. or young people's ability to do that.
They've already, not due to this study, but due to this study, they've already been like, Rishi Sunak, like I think the end of last year's year was saying that he was going to suggest new guidelines for schools in terms of trans kids.
Mm.
And some of them were just like,
not good. Yeah.
No, and it is entirely about policing, like social transition.
And that's it. That's it. So, I mean, again, we're going to do this in our Pride Month. We'll do a full breakdown of all of this stuff. I think it was just important to get talking about this now and put out some of the main things. Another thing is the discarded paper. So you mentioned this earlier, Noah. What about all the other studies? They discarded, I think, 98%, like most of the papers that they were looking at. Now, they said they weren't sort of high quality enough. And that's a normal thing to do. I mean, you'll know this, Luke, won't you? That if you're doing a sort of review, if you're looking at a lot of papers, a meta-analysis, right, you will get rid of the ones that are low quality.
Yeah.
Now, the highest quality sort of study when it comes to treatment, as you may know, are randomized control trials, double-blind ones. So basically, there's at least two groups. One of them gets the thing, one of them doesn't get the thing, and nobody knows which group is which, and both groups are decided randomly.
Like a placebo drug.
Yeah, it could be a placebo, it could be an alternative treatment, you know what I mean, right? So basically something to compare to. Now, it makes sense to want to get rid of any study that isn't double-blind, or that isn't blinded or randomized. Can either of you come up with any issue with trying to blind a study?
Hey, I can think of at least two.
On hormone blockers. Yeah, go on.
I mean, just physical.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's hard to do blind a study when there are obvious physical changes. Uh-huh. I mean, the idea is that no one, not even the person, not the person doing the study, not the person prescribing the treatment, knows which is which.
I would go insane if they gave me placebo testosterone.
So this is hormone blockers, right? Oh, so this is what they're talking about. And so it's rare to actually have double-blind randomized control trials in sort of medical and particularly pediatric care when it comes to sort of certain things. One, ethical concerns, right? If a treatment works, okay, so let's say you've got this miracle cancer drug, right? And it starts working. You are not going to sort of let the people that you're not giving that treatment to finish the trial without that treatment. You're going to... That would be unethical to withhold that treatment from them, right?
Yeah.
So you give them that treatment. Yeah, it's just genuinely difficult to run a study on something that produces or hinders obvious physical changes. And so a lot of these, like it's basically impossible to have a double blind randomized control trial for puberty blockers. And if it's not impossible, it's almost definitely unethical to put kids through that when, you know, the best thing for them seems to be at this current moment puberty blockers to stop them from going through this irreversible change, right?
Back in 2020, I was on the COVID vaccine trial.
I recall.
So I was given, this was while they were all being developed, so I was on for Novavax, which is separate to the mRNA ones. And during the course of this trial, while the other ones were being developed, it was a bit slower, this trial. And they were basically saying that we had some vulnerable people that were taking part in the trial as well. And they were just saying at any point, if you're as part of this trial and you don't yet know which one you are, if there is a vaccine that is approved, obviously we are not going to stop you from getting that to keep you on the trial because obviously there is a good reason for you.
Yeah.
So come up. Like, that makes sense.
And it's
also just like in terms of like gender dysphoria, like, being a trans kid and going through puberty, it's like the thing that I like to say to people that don't understand it is like, okay, imagine one day you woke up and you just had tits and you were just like, why are these here? They should not be here.
Mm.
You would want to do something about that, right? And in terms of like puberty and stuff, like when I was a kid, I had the sit down talk with my mom being like, you're going to grow boobs soon. And I physically, like, part of my brain was just like, no, that's silly. That's ridiculous. That'll never happen to me. So, like, the idea of somebody like me being told, you may or may not have this medication that you've kind of been waiting for your whole childhood, that would feel like torture.
They give an alternative treatment there as well, though. So like a talking therapy or something.
I was offered art therapy.
That's insane.
I was offered art therapy when I went to the child's gender clinic, because the wait list was so long and I And I didn't get to the Charles Jenner Clinic. I was there like a week before the 18th birthday. They sent me to CAMHS instead, which is like child and adolescent health, mental health services.
Yeah.
After I went to the Jenner Clinic, they're like, yeah, sorry, we can't do anything for you. Yeah, sorry, the adult clinic can't fast list you. Art therapy, though? I was like, no, I have boobs. the problem is not the thoughts. The problem is the body.
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly why you wouldn't be able to do this kind of study for these kind of drugs. Mm. Now, even if you could, right, like, it, as I said, it wouldn't necessarily be ethical, but setting the bar there, like, the bar was basically set too high for what was judged to be a sort of good enough study to be viewed in the report. So you can very easily then create the narrative of, well, there's not enough evidence around this, and also there aren't enough good studies. Like, look at how many studies we had to discard, right? It's very easy to create that narrative when you set the bar unreasonably high. And most people aren't going to know, you know, they're not going to understand what a randomized control or double blind trial is, right? They're not going to think about the logistics of it. They don't even know that, you know, for example, when it comes to using things off-label, like puberty blockers have been used for kids, for trans kids, right? They're being used off-label. That's a normal thing in pediatric medicine, right? The discarded papers, that's not, like, it's really difficult to get a paper that would meet the standards that they've set, right? So already that's a bit of bias entering there. This whole sort of brain maturation thing, that's based on shoddy evidence, and you know, they're undermining the idea that you've got to be up to 25 when your brain stops sort of developing.
Frontal lobe development or
something
like that.
Yeah, but also that's not true. Your brain continues changing throughout your life. Like, that's how that works. And we cannot then just be like, okay,
no,
cool.
No, 25th birthday.
Yeah, but so if trans people, you're not able to be trans until you're 25. Okay, cool. You can't drive, drink, get tattoos, buy a house, decide what subjects you want to do, go to uni, anything until you're 25, right? That should be what happens, obviously, if no one's mature enough to make lifelong decisions before the age of 25. But that's based on kind of shoddy science in the first instance. And it also undermines Gillick competence, which is this whole sort of, again, something we could cover later on in a future episode. But broadly, it is just the sort of, it's what we've got in place to ensure that young people and, you know, anyone is able to sort of consent to medical care. It's just kind of a basis of consent, essentially, right? That we use in the UK. Mm-hmm. If we talk about puberty blockers being experimental, that's a huge headline that I've seen. They're not experimental. They're not. They're being used. In fact,
I know exactly what they did.
What the NHS has proposed, or what's been proposed, actually, is to use kids in an experiment.
When the kids' gender clinic closed down, they were like, "We're closing down the clinic, and also we're putting in some new rules." So if you want to go on hormone blockers as a kid, you can only do that if you approve being part of a study. So, like, yep, essentially, you can only get this medication that you know that you need if you agree to be a guinea pig.
As part of a trial so that they can look at the sort of long-term effect. And again, that's something that this report both suggests and supports, this sort of thing. And it makes sense, you know, having a sort of study that's ongoing, but having it be the only way that you're able to access that healthcare, I don't think it's great. But yeah, no, so they're not experimental. They're being used off-label. And this is from a paper on off-label drug use in pediatrics. Off-label use of drugs is highly common in pediatrics due to delays in updating drug instructions and difficulties in conducting clinical trials. The prevalence of pediatric off-label drug prescription has been estimated to range from 3.2% to 95% overall. Basically, right, it looks at gaps in reporting and evidence of off-label drug recommendations in pediatric care guidelines. Essentially, what that's saying is that, like, there are a lot of drugs that are recommended in guidelines that haven't been explicitly sort of tested and approved for that specific use in pediatric care, right?
This
and
is all the off-label stuff.
This is all the off-label stuff. This is not just to do with trans stuff. So just generally, there is a lot of off-label usage of medication in pediatric care, and pointing to hormone blockers and saying, ah, look, they're experimenting on your kids. No, they're not. We know how they affect people. We've got lots of studies on them. We use them in precocious puberty, had been doing for about 40 years now. And this is just another off-label use that doesn't seem to have any obvious and sort of very dangerous side effects thus far, right? Mm. So there's no caution, yes. More research, always. I would never say, there's no topic that I'm going to say, no more research, we're done, right?
Yeah.
Except for some physics, right? Like, Come on, guys.
Yes, it can't.
Calm down, right? One more. How much more? How much physics is there? Not that much.
1 + 1. What does it really equal?
What does it mean?
What does it mean?
Mathematicians are not scientists. Anyway, you
also can't do research on this if you just ban them either.
Well, that's the point. So research is difficult because of stigma, but it's also, you know, basically it's coming from every angle, right? This is dangerous and it's experimental. You can't put kids on it. We can't study it. It's basically just a way of getting people to not be trans, right? That's the end goal here. So it's not experimental. Off-label drug use is common in pediatric care. There's no reason to be specifically worried about this. We're aware of the risks thus far, and nothing has presented itself in the past 30 years. So more research, but that doesn't mean more research and stop the thing that seems to be working, right? Like, I've seen people compare this to thalidomide. We've done an episode on thalidomide.
Come on.
Ridiculous. Not even remotely close, right? And the reality of the waiting lists, as I mentioned, it started in 2020. There was a 2-year waiting list, and now it's much, much longer. And actually, the UK...
But to be fair, they are consistent. Every waiting list is longer over the past few years.
True, yeah. But the UK is actually more conservative when it comes to politics. No, it's more conservative when it comes to sort of providing this kind of care. So after assessment with GIDS, only about 25% of those who'd finished assessment would then be given HRT. Other countries sort of do their equivalent of this at a higher rate, right? So broadly, if you just an overview of the CAST report, right? It's already kind of like misrepresenting some papers, some studies. It's disregarded a whole host of data with some sort of almost unattainably high sort of barrier for entry, right? If it says if you don't do this almost unattainable thing, we're going to ignore you and say you're bad science, right? It's basically done almost every trick in the book to disregard the information that we do have to reach a certain conclusion. And that conclusion is, I wouldn't say undue caution, but undue restriction of trans healthcare. And worst of all, I think, is the very sort of neutral way that it goes about this, or ostensibly neutral way it goes about this, right? Like, you can read this report and think, actually... This is very even-handed. Maybe they have been experimenting on kids. Maybe we shouldn't be doing this. Maybe we shouldn't be doing that. But ultimately, when you pick it apart, there's not as much there as it sort of purports. You know, it's very empty. And there's, from my perspective, there's a lot of influence from a lot of people who have a vested interest in trans people not existing.
Well, I know that Rishi Sunak said that if trans people could just wait until they're 25, then...
Yeah, sure. And cancer patients, you should also wait till you're 25.
Wow, just calm down a little bit.
Childhood leukemia? Ooh, sorry,
bud. Just wait a little bit.
Actually, you see, here's the thing. Chemotherapy, it can have lifelong consequences. Oh, God. Some kind of surgery? To remove,
we want to get rid of childhood leukemia. We only want adulthood leukemia, right? That's what we want. We want to push it until they get to an adult.
And then...
If you just get rid of people with leukemia in general.
Well, that's the thing. If you leave them long enough, they will die. And so you then have fewer adults with leukemia or transgenderness, which is a win-win, right?
Yes.
That's where we end this. There's just one... more thing left to do. It's the Quickfire Quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. Experimental edition.
Ugh. So the rules for the Quickfire Quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finish ask the question wins. What do they win, Luke?
A lifetime supply of puberty blockers.
What is your buzzer, Luke?
I'm not going to be able to maintain that.
Noah, what is your buzzer? And my question for you is, what is the most common complaint for puberty blockers when I finished asking the question, mate? What's the most common complaint for puberty blockers in children? Noah.
Localized pain.
Yes, at the injection site. Ding, ding, ding. Well done. You get a lifetime supply of puberty blockers. No more puberty for you. You'll just be a sexless imp.
Yeah.
Well, that is all from us, but before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons, with an extra special thank you to executive producers Glitch Rabbit and Rev Lunar, and thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday, and why not leave us a nice wee review? Support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
I'm at Ethan B. Pirelli everywhere.
I thought you were Luke Cutfort.
Shit.
And you can find me at NoFins everywhere, apart from Twitter, where it's NoFin Adams, and TikTok, where it's the NoFins.
Bye.
Bye.
Say bye.
Bye, guys.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.